Welcome back to the Sports Ticket. The Chiefs with a big win last night over the Patriots on a Monday night. Wasn't scheduled to be that way originally, but there was a two Monday night football games last night, and both the Packers and the Chiefs improved to 4-0. And here to talk about the Chiefs win is Curtis Siebel with the program. You can hear him and Seren and the gang from 2 to 6 weekdays on Sports Radio 810 WHB out of Kansas City. Curtis, my friend, how are you?
Fantastic. Wade, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm really good when my favorite football team is 4-0. And we were talking yesterday about this. Chiefs fans, I think, have become spoiled. And it's like, oh, no, the offense didn't score a whole bunch of points. Well, your defense is better. And I will take an ugly win, which I would say last night was somewhat ugly to some. I'll take a ugly win 16 weeks in a row plus a few more wins in the playoffs and win a Super Bowl ugly than lose pretty like we did a few years ago, 54-51, 43-40. How about you?
Yes, I will take that every week. The best teams in football have a game or two where things just don't line up, where the other team kind of out-schemes them a bit, and it's hard to keep that intensity. They clearly showed up in Baltimore last week with a chip on their shoulder and wind at their back, and they didn't last night. And I won't say it's understandable. I mean, it's hard to have that intensity every single week. You're at home. The game's been delayed. You got a team on a plane that morning. And I can understand them maybe not getting up for that game last night. And plus, the other issue is that the guy on the other side's got six rings, and he knows how to scheme a defense. And that's what he did last night. He's always been really good at that, and it took a long time for the Chiefs to kind of work out of that hole. And, I mean, a lot of things went their way, certainly, but that's okay, man. I'd rather be sitting here going, gosh, he didn't play very well, and won by 16, than thinking, right, yeah, they played so well, and damn, I wish you hadn't lost that game at the end. So I will absolutely take the ugly win every time.
Yeah, I mean, the game at the Chargers, they found a way to win. Last night wasn't pretty, found a way to win. I have no problem with it whatsoever. You know, when you look at this, the team, though, I do wonder a little bit, and I'm not overly concerned about it, but I wonder what your thoughts are on this, because it does appear that the Chiefs, at least offensively, have an extra gear that they can flip the switch to. And I do think that can be a little bit scary if you get into this habit of, well, we just got to flip the switch, we'll be fine, our defense is keeping them in it. And you look at what the Chiefs did against the Ravens, where they were on top of their game, and then I thought they got a little bit bored, running a little bit of a trick play, double reverse. And I thought, you know what, they think they can do whatever they want. Next thing you know, Darwin Thompson fumbles, and the game's a little bit different. I didn't really ever think the game was in doubt, but it did become interesting, and then the enemy gets all over them, and it's like they flip that switch, and they go down and score, not a problem. And last night, kind of the same thing. You know, it's 6-3, the defense gets a turnover, and then it's finally like, okay, guys, we really need to focus here and flip that switch and score, and they score on their next two drives. Are you a little bit concerned about that, because that sometime that'll come back and bite this team, maybe at a bad spot?
I'll be more concerned if they come into a game where they try to flip the switch and the light didn't come on.
Yeah.
At this point, every time they flip the switch, the power has been there. And I go back to Bill Belichick. I mean, he's the greatest coach in the history of the game, and few coaches have ever, probably no coach has ever, made more money off taking away the best weapons of a really great offense. I mean, you think about the first time he did it, that Super Bowl against the Rams back in 2001, the greatest show on turf. And he's going to be in the Hall of Fame, partly because of Tom Brady, but partly because he is the best coordinator ever at taking away the best thing you do offensively. And he did it again last night. So, I mean, there was just nobody open. I mean, I think the Chiefs were trying to flip the switch, but the coverage, they just didn't have any open receivers. And Mahomes didn't really get that much pressure. He got a little bit, but a lot of that pressure came late. He'd get flushed out, he'd look for the open guy. Man, he just wasn't there. And so I think you got to give a lot of credit to the scheme of Bill Belichick and that defense. I think the first 2 weeks we heard a report earlier before the game yesterday from Diana Rossini that they'd spent the first 2 weeks kind of using them as like preseason games, mm-hmm. kind of not really doing that much schematically, mm-hmm. just kind of get their feet under them, which would kind of explain maybe some of the lackluster play we saw on offense in both those games. that and the Chargers can really pressure the quarterback. And then you kind of saw that would explain why they kind of opened it up against Baltimore last week. Last night, I think they kind of tried to a number of times. They just didn't have the opportunity, and finally they did. I mean, they managed to get ahead of this team, had a couple of long touchdown drives. One of them was aided by a sizable penalty. But they went 85 yards and 75 yards when they absolutely had to do it and kind of put the game away. So until they flip that switch and there's nothing there, I'm okay with it because it just always seems to be there when they need to have it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Curtis Siebold of Sports Radio 810 WHB. He and Saran, the program, weekday morning or weekday afternoons. I said mornings. Used to be in the mornings. You're at afternoon now, 2 to 6, Monday through Friday on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. He's joining us today on the Ticket Talk Chiefs. The Chiefs last night defensively, and I remember this, and I think we're all in agreement on this. I kind of had fun with this after Alex Smith and the Chiefs lost to the Titans in the playoffs, and I was really upset as a Chiefs fan. I decided to play it into something I thought would be a little bit entertaining, and I said I'm a free agent now. I've been a Chiefs fan my whole life, and so I had a whole bunch of people. I asked them to give me their jerseys, loan it out. I'd wear a different jersey every day for a couple weeks, see which one that I felt most comfortable in, what looked the best. I posted those pictures on Facebook. I said I'm a free agent. And I didn't mean I couldn't sign back with the Chiefs. It just meant that I was an unhappy Chiefs fan because I didn't think the Chiefs were going anywhere in regards to winning a championship. And I said two things that needed to happen, and that was give the keys to Mahomes and two, fire Bob Sutton. And I said, if one of those two things happens, I will stay a Chiefs fan. And then, of course, the Chiefs gave the keys to Mahomes, stuck with Sutton 1 year too long, and then, of course, made the right decision, got rid of him. And what do you know? Steve Spagnuolo comes in, and the Chiefs' defense improves, and the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. So the Chiefs have made the right moves, the two obvious moves. But that sounds really simple. Brett Veach, though, has done a lot of great things getting the right pieces for Steve Spagnuolo. Let me talk about that defense, because I know fans enjoyed Mahomes throwing for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns, but now that offense doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to score every single time, and we saw that again last night.
And they don't necessarily have to have all their players either. I mean that last night the Chiefs, yes, everyone knows that Cam Newton didn't play, but the Chiefs were also without Chris Jones on that line. They were also been without Charvarius Ward since the middle part of the opening game. They were without L'Jarius Sneed, who was hurt in the previous game. I mean, they were running low on corners. And they've always had issues kind of with the depth and the quality of play at linebacker. And Willie Gay really hasn't seen the field much yet. So he was able to put together a pretty good defensive group. And that's the other thing. I mean, we talked about how when the Chiefs hit the ball, there weren't any open receivers. One of the reasons Brian Hoyer had a hard time is because there weren't any open receivers last night either. Now, their receiving core isn't as good as the Chiefs, but a lot of the problems he had was the fact that he had nowhere to throw the ball. A weapon last night was the ground game. Was the 17 for 100 yards from Harris. Other than that, they really didn't do a lot. And Brian Hoyer clearly made some huge mistakes, but he made the mistakes because there was pressure on him. I mean, the sack and fumble was, or the sack at the end of the half was a boneheaded play, but there was a guy there to get him. I mean, that didn't happen if you don't have a pass rush. The pick six to Tyrann Mathieu, that was a bad mistake, but Tyrann Mathieu's a really good player and has great instincts and caught the ball and took it back. The pick that Thornhill got, that happened because he's a ball hawk. And so, yes, the Patriots made mistakes, but the Chiefs have the defensive players to take advantage of those mistakes. And that seems to be happening week in and week out, regardless of who's in the lineup. So I think it's been a fascinating thing that the job that Spagnuolo has done this year. With the kind of I won't say a mash unit, but he keeps losing guys, and their pass coverage still is just fantastic. It helps that he has two really good safeties. Thornhill coming back as early as he did has been huge. He's been fantastic for a guy coming off an ACL tear. You know, I think back to the offsides, the call against the Pats in the conference championship game, and I had not watched that play again until they won the Super Bowl. I'm not watching that play until they win it all. And so last year after they won it, I went back and I watched it again. And I think about what would have happened, as bad as that play is in Chiefs memory, if he doesn't jump off, if he isn't lined up offsides, and they go to the Super Bowl, they probably win.
Yeah.
and they probably don't fire Bob Sutton.
Uh-huh.
Where are we today if Dee Ford isn't lined up offside? I mean, part of what made this team a championship team was the change. Mm-hmm. I don't think the change happens if they win that year. So I'm always fascinated by the what would have happened if this had happened type scenarios, and that's one that will always entertain me. But what Steve Spagnuolo has done with this defense through 4 weeks is nothing short of amazing.
I remember that, too, in regards to we were talking about how maybe that is a blessing in disguise to get Bob Sutton fired. And in essence, I think it did, of course, on that and just not being able to stop the Patriots at all and being predictable. And when I saw Bill Belichick, you go on his show after they beat the Chiefs AFC title game, saying almost every single time, we knew what they were going to be in. We knew what they were going to do. I was like, oh, my God, we got to change something. And I will say that I agree with you on all of that, and it probably was a blessing in disguise. At the same time, call me really greedy, but I'm sitting here going, Steve Spagnuolo was unemployed. He could have been the defensive coordinator that year, and I don't think any of that stuff would have happened, and we could be looking at right now trying to go for three rings in a row, you know?
Yeah, that's the one solution I didn't take into account was that they could have fired him at the beginning of the 18th season, not the beginning of the 19th season, and I think they would have been just fine, but... It is what it is, and the hardware resides here in KC, and those big, beautiful rings are all over the place, and it looks like the Chiefs, with the first team ever to start 4-0 four consecutive years, are kind of off and running. And, you know, I think the players, to a man, responded last night the way I thought they would, as if they had lost. I mean, I think every guy, the standard there now is so high.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're glad they won and they even covered, but... They know they didn't play well last night. And I'll tell you, one team I would not want to be is the Las Vegas Raiders, because I think the few days you're going to have of practice this week are going to be very intense. And I think the Chiefs might beat the Raiders by 30 points this week.
Well, I'd be okay with that. And that's next place I wanted to go. You look at the schedule. You know, Houston, of course, 0-4, fired their coach, but they still have a lot of talent. They wanted the Chargers. Chargers match up with them defensively and provide pressure, as you noted. Ravens go in there. That, many people thought that'd be a tough game, and they rolled them. Patriots, you know, I think we all thought the Patriots would still give the Chiefs a decent game, even without Cam Newton, because of their coach. The Raiders are improved, at least somewhat. And then Buffalo, I think that's the dangerous game that I look at here on a Thursday, a short turnaround. If they get through the Raider game unscathed, they'd be 5-0. Then the Bills, you somehow find a way to win there, 6-0, and then the schedule gets a little bit easier. At Denver, Drew Lock probably won't be back by then. New York Jets, they're bad. They're a train wreck at home. Carolina, now they've bounced back. Oddly enough, they're 2-0 without Christian McCaffrey. And then the Chiefs would have their bye week before hitting a tougher stretch with on the road at Vegas and Tampa Bay. You know, I know it's going to happen. If the Chiefs are undefeated going into the bye week, people are going to start talking about this team. Can they go undefeated? I've heard Adam Schefter on your guys' show say, listen, it's not going to happen. It just doesn't happen in sports. I don't think it'll happen either. But at the same time, I do feel like the Chiefs almost have to beat themselves in order to lose. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I saw people on Twitter last night. I'm a pretty avid, active tweeter during games, and I saw a lot of people popping up. Can we stop talking about undefeated? No. Well, I'll stop talking about undefeated when they lose a game.
Right.
As long as they keep winning, why would you want to stop talking about it? But the Buffalo game, and I will say, although I think they're going to smack the Raiders this weekend, This is kind of a look-ahead scenario.
Yeah.
I mean, when you got the game at Buffalo 4 days away, I could see a little bit of that. That is something that Andy Reid's going to have to kind of watch against. But I don't think this team really seems to be impervious to the letdown game, even regardless of what I said earlier about this one. I think this was a nice warning shot to not let down. So I don't think you'll see that Sunday. But, you know, I was looking at the numbers, and everyone talks about, you know, the challenges of going on the road in a short week. Since they went to the full Thursday night game every week back in 2012, road teams are 41-59. I think it were or maybe it was a percentage 41% wins, 59% losses. So it's about a 40-60. It isn't awful. It's not good, but you know it isn't like the home team wins 75% of the time. So. That is the big challenge. That kind of is kind of the fulcrum where everything hinges. If they win that game, then you start looking. All right, then they're going to go, I think, to the bye at 9-0 because mm-hmm. they're not going to lose at Denver, and the Jets and Panthers aren't going to come in here and win. I don't think the you're at the bye week at 9. You have a week off, and then you've got 4 out of 5 on the road. But one of them is, again, the Raiders, who have played a little bit better at home. So that's a pretty rough stretch. But win at Buffalo, and I think they're at the bye at 9-0. Mm-hmm. And maybe they don't go unbeaten, but every week that they can continue that is one more week that they're in a shot for the number one seed. Exactly. And this is a year when the number one seed is even more crucial than years before because it's the only one that gets a bye. So if in pursuit of perfection, I'm probably paraphrasing here, if in pursuit of a perfection you find excellence, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Well, keep shooting for it. And undefeated teams fight harder. I mean, they'll fight to keep that zero off the board, you know. Mm-hmm. That as long as that zero is up there, I think they fight a little bit harder. That's why sometimes when you see a team lose, you'll see them lose the little double bounce. They'll lose 2 in a row. Keep fighting, man. As long as that zero's up there, I think this team fights just a little bit harder.
Yeah, and you know, I think of a Thursday night game, and granted the team's different now, but remember when the Chiefs went to 0-10 Oakland and they lost on a short week?
Yeah.
And we hear so much about Andy Reid.
2014,
And we hear so much about Andy Reid's deadly when he has extra time to prepare. But obviously you could argue the flip side for any coach. That'd be less time to prepare, and then, of course, you have to travel on top of it. It makes it very difficult. So it is a dangerous game, but you're right. We got to focus on the Raider game first and then move on to the Bills game. What about the COVID-19 impact? Obviously, the Chiefs don't have a full house, but it's an advantage to have 16,000 people there, and most stadiums right now aren't allowing fans. That's an important advantage for the Chiefs in home games, at least at the moment. And then what about the COVID-19 situation in regards to the NFL rules? Because I have no idea. I mean, I'm sitting here, and I have a hard time believing that you know, only Cam Newton's has got COVID on the Patriots. I have a hard time believing he's the only one. I kind of could say the same thing maybe with the Chiefs with their practice quarterback, Tamu. But it is a weird dynamic that we're dealing with now. And one thing that I am a little bit fearful of, and I hope it doesn't happen, and it sounds selfish to say, is that I don't want the season being just completely wiped out at some point. We don't finish it like college basketball, and then Mahomes, one of his prime years at the age of 25, is completely wasted because of COVID. I can't control it. I shouldn't worry about it. That's how selfish I am.
Yeah, we talked to Ben Volen of the Boston Globe for our Central Bank in the Midwest pregame show yesterday, and he said, you know, he couldn't believe the game was still taking place. Mm-hmm. In fact, the term he used was, it's nuts that the Patriots had to get on a plane, two mm-hmm. planes actually, yeah. and fly to play this game. He said the key days, he says, we saw what happened with Tennessee. You know, it was the coming days after that kind of revealed how many had it. He said, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week are crucial to see what where those numbers are, because you can test negative and still have it be incubating. So just because you test negative does not mean you're going to continue to test negative. So we'll find out just what risk this was by the end of the week. And so I mean, the Patriots clearly have an issue to take care of, and I guess as do the Chiefs. I mean, we have to joke about the fact that Jordan Tamu was the guy who was Cam Newton in practice, and,
right.
and you kind of think, dude, you don't have to do everything he does.
Right.
Like, I can see Jordan Tamu's mom going, if he jumped off a cliff, would you do it?
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, you didn't have to copy everything, but that'll be interesting. I mean, I think when everyone saw also testing positive Chiefs quarterback, Jordan mm-hmm. Tamu, okay, wasn't the big guy, but yes, it appears that we're going to have more and more of these things. That it wasn't just the Titans. Maybe not. It won't be to that degree. But the idea that we're done seeing positive tests is kind of foolhardy, and it makes you wonder why the NFL didn't build in these breaks. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what they could have done, and I was a little late. I didn't have this idea back in August, but I'm not working for the National Football League, so I really shouldn't have to think about it. But what they should have done, in retrospect, was just get rid of the interconference games. Just play 12 games. Everyone plays your conference schedule, and you build in a bye week after week 4, and then a bye week after your 8th game, after your 12th game, and then at the end there's a bye.
Yeah.
So you've got a week where if something happens and a game needs to be rescheduled, everyone's off that week.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you have a week where no one's playing, or maybe one or two games are playing. But that's what you have to do to save the integrity of the sport this year. So they should have built those spots in there where they had open dates. And and they didn't do it. They kind of plowed forward. Now they're in a spot where they're trying to move teams around to facilitate getting these games rescheduled or playing games when they perhaps shouldn't. So I don't think the NFL had the greatest plan. They didn't really have any plan, so to speak, when it comes to that. I mean, I saw that they changed the protocols moving forward and discussed changing four or five more yesterday. That's going to help, but I mean, kind of cow's already out of the barn to that point. I mean, it might help a little bit, but they should have been doing these things before.
Well, and I think that's a good idea you have. Of course, you and I both know why they didn't do anything like that, and that's because of money. And obviously, you get 16 games instead of 12, and you have more games on TV and everything else. I would imagine that was a big reason. You know, it seems like money drives everything, of course.
It does, but I mean, was money going to matter if they have to just cancel games anyway?
I agree.
It's, I mean, that's the part I think about this. About sports in general, that I think does bother fans, is that how much money do you really have to make?
Right.
I mean, the NFL, I think, is going to be good if they sacrifice 4 weeks for 1 year.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
I mean, they're going to be all right.
Yeah, they'll be okay, no doubt about it. What do you think here for the Chiefs' record, since I got you here? We looked at the schedule a little bit. What do you think? At the end of the year, the Chiefs' record's going to be what? And then where will they trip up? If they trip up.
Well, it's one of those things where it's hard to find, like, the individual to pick the game. I mean, some people say, well, I don't know what game's going to be that they're going to lose to. I mean, the obvious point, I don't think there's any home game that should scare them. I mean, there really is. The Raiders, Jets, Panthers, Broncos, Falcons, Chargers, I don't think they're going to lose at home. And they've got six road games, and three of them are against teams that are pretty damn good, the Bills and the Buccaneers and the Saints. Sometimes these teams, the great teams, will trip up against a team that they're not really expecting to lose to. So I suppose at Miami could be something that would happen. But I think they're going to win at Buffalo, and I think that at some point they'll probably lose either at Tampa or at New Orleans, and maybe one more. So just to be safe, I'm going to say they're 14-2.
Well, I have a Dolphin fan, a good friend of mine here in North Central Kansas, and he said that he'll cheer for the Chiefs as soon as they lose a game because he really likes the fact that Dolphins are the only team that went undefeated and won it all. And the Chiefs would be 12-0 going at that Dolphin game, and the Dolphins knock them off. So that's something maybe to keep an eye on, I guess. Time for the off-the-wall question, Curtis. Curtis Seabolt, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Curtis, of course, on the program, 810 WHB in Kansas City, weekday mornings with Saran Petro from 2 to 6 p.m. The dumbest rule in sports, in your opinion, and I'm going to set this up for you so you can make your own choice. The Kentucky High School Activity Association a few weeks ago came out, and I thought it was a joke, but it is not, that they are eliminating the jump ball from basketball games in the state of Kentucky. COVID-19 protocols is what they called them. And then I heard a rumor yesterday that the State Activity Association in the state of Kansas is talking about doing the same thing. And I've heard through the grapevine, after talking to a couple people, that one of the reasons why they're considering eliminating jump ball is to protect the official. My counterpoint would be, if an official is worried about getting COVID by throwing up a jump ball, that official should not officiate this year and sit it out. I think it is one of the dumbest rules I've ever heard in my life. I know it's not that big a deal on the landscape of what life is as we know it. Yay, we'll just go ahead and give the visiting team the ball first. But still, to me, it's really, really silly and dumb. What do you think, Curtis? What's the dumbest rule in sports out there, in your opinion?
The dumbest rule. I'll give you something that's interesting. I won't give you a dumbest rule. I'll give you a dumbest stat.
That sounds good.
This is one that baffles me. Is the way they figure OPS in baseball.
Okay.
They take two percentages and then add them together, which would drive any mathematician insane, because that's not an accurate way of portraying anything. It overweighs on base because it applies the same weight to batting average or slugging as it does to on base, even though slugging has a smaller sample size because it doesn't take into account all plate appearances, just at bats. Baseball has there's a cottage industry of incredibly intricate ways of figuring stats and WAR and BABIP and FIP and all these things, but to figure up a stat that is one of the most widely repeated and measured stats in the history of sports. That was just add percentages. It should be total bases plus walks, whatever goes into on base, divided by plate appearances. Uh-huh. That is your OPS. So we have all these crazy stats, and when we want to measure OPS, oh, let's just throw them together. Why not? It just baffles me. Mm-hmm. But that's a bee in my bonnet, as well as the way inherited runners are added to ERA to relievers. To me, if you come into a game and the guy is at third and he scores, he should be charged to the guy before you.
Yes.
If he's at first, he should be charged to you.
The
fact that all inherited runners go to the pitcher that left the game is nuts. If the guy got one base on me and three bases on somebody else, that's not my run. That's my baseball stats soapbox.
I agree with you, and you need to really work on that first one and fix it, because then you could really get lots of, some kind of reward and get paid and call it the K-Dog stat or something. I don't know. Put a name on it and trademark it, and you'd be rich. Go for it, man.
I'm good.
Do it. Because I know you got nothing else to do.
I would still come on and talk to you, though, even if I was rich.
Okay, well, good. That's good to know. I'm going to mark that down. Curtis will still talk to Wade when he's rich. And Wade will be contacting Curtis more often, since Curtis is rich. See how that works? Yeah. Hey, man, how do people listen to you? Then let people know they're listening here to us, how they can listen to you guys.
We are on from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You can listen to us live at 810WHB.com. And if you like football and you want to check out the best pregame show in the Midwest, you can check out the Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show, which starts usually 3 hours before kickoff and then becomes countdown to kickoff about an hour before, with Soren Petro, Mark Boerichter, the former Chiefs wide receiver, and myself. So there's two places you can listen to us during the football season.
Fantastic. Curtis, keep up the great week. Say hi to Soren for me, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for the time, buddy.
Thanks, Wade.
That's Curtis Siebold, 810 WHB, Kansas City. Check him out, as he said, 2 to 6 weekdays.